Hold on. Shlishi, the third reading of Parshas Tzav, after having spoken about sin offerings and guilt offerings and the Kohanim's participation in how these are brought, we move on to the Thanksgiving offering. V'zeis Toiras Zevach Hashlamim. This is the teachings, or the rules that govern the korban, the offering, which is called Shlamim, the peace offering, Asher Yakriv LaHashem, which is brought before God. So it's interesting to note that the korban of Shlamim only comes after Chatos. But that's in Parshas Tzav. The Parshas Vayikra is not like that. So one of the reasons for this is, says Ramban, is because now we speak about the Kohanim and their involvement and what they stand to gain. And one might think that the reason that the Kohanim would be interested in doing what they have to do is because they get a piece, because they have a major role to play. They have to eat the Korban Chatos. But the point that's being made here is that even with regard to Hashlamim, which a person brings in order to express his thanksgiving to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so here the Kohen is not the sole eater. Here the Kohen comes later on. And because Parshas Tzav speaks about that which goes to the Kohenim, we begin with the emphasis on the areas where the Kohen plays the dominant role. And now we move on to the Shlamim, where the Kohanim, insofar as consumption of the offering, are playing a secondary role, as we will hear, because a large part of the offering, the Korban, is eaten by the person who brings the Korban. Now here it says, Asher Yakriv LaHashem. To whom else would we bring an offering? And previously it doesn't say, Asher Yakriv LaHashem, that you bring it close to God. It says Asher Yakriv. So why here does it say Asher Yakriv LaHashem? So the Kli Yakar says that all of the other sins, they come for a reason. What's the reason for all the other offerings, pardon me? They come for a reason. And the reason is sin, a lack, a deficiency, a shortcoming. It's something you need to make up for because you did a sin, because you did a chet. You have to bring a korban chatos. And as such, so it's not so close to Hashem because it is a little bit of a self-serving element. But the korban shlamim is not because I have an issue. The korban shlamim is because I want to come closer to Hashem. And that's why here it emphasizes zevach hashlamim asher yakriv laHashem, because it's the korban shlamim that brings a person closest to Hashem, not when I do this out of obligation, out of necessity, because I did something wrong, but rather because I seek closeness to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Whereas we'll see, there are other possibilities for a korban teida. It could not only be because I seek closeness to Hashem, but in fact, it could also be because I have an opportunity and a responsibility to say thank you for a miracle that has occurred. Now, another interesting thing about the introduction of the korban shlamim is it doesn't say yakrivu. It also says yakriv as if future tense. So the Vayikra Rabba says when Mashiach will come, all of the other korbanot will be phased out. Why will they be phased out?
After the sin.
Exactly. No more sins. No more korban chatos. No more guilt. No more korban asham. We're not going to make these kind of mistakes. But one korban will remain. What korban is that? The korban shlamim. And that's why it's madua. That's yakriv. Lashon asid says the Vayikra Rabba, because even in the future, even after people finish making up for whatever they did wrong during the time of galut, and even after all his offerings are brought, the korban teida is still going to remain in place. Okay, with this little preface, let's get into the meat of the offering. Or I should say, meat and bread. Im al teida yakrivenu. If the teida, if it's being brought as an act of thanksgiving, the hikriv al zevach ha-teida, then he'll bring close or offer, along with this zevach, the slaughtering of the teida, chalais, matzais, belulais, bashemen, loaves of unleavened wafers or breads, and these will be kneaded in oil. Rekike matzah, wafers of matzah, which are meshuchim b'shemen, which are glazed in oil. V'seiles, mirubeches, and dough that is scalded, which are also chalas, also loaves. And these are belulais b'shemen. These will also be kneaded in oil. So we have three kinds of bread, In addition to these three kinds of bread, which we'll soon find out, requires 10 loaves apiece. Al chalas lechem chametz, there's another 10 loaves, and this is chametz, which yakriv karbonai al zevach toidas shlomov, that he'll bring together with his karbon, which is brought as an act of thanksgiving. So we got a lot of bread. 40 loaves.
Is it possible to have a challah that's not chametz?
Is it possible to have a challah that's not chametz? You're stuck in your image of a challah of today. A challah simply means a loaf, piece of bread. It means water and flour. It's kneaded together, and then it's baked. You could bake it before it has a chance to rise, or after it has a chance to rise. Matzah does not have to look round and flat. That's what Passover matzah looks like. Matzah could come in various forms. The point is that once the flour and water are mixed together, so the flour has an agent called Amy B. Lacey, or Amy D. Lacey, and what happens is, Amy C. What happens is when the flour gets mixed with water, or alkaline really, anything which is alkaline based, what happens is it triggers a chemical reaction. The chemical reaction begins to arise. That's what happens. When it comes together, when the consistency unites, when the particles of flour unite, so the what you would call, I guess, the side effect of this fermentation, which is called chimutz, is that little air pockets develop and it rises. And that's what we call chametz. And that's prohibited on Pesach. But in the Beis HaMikdash, all of the loaves that were brought, the vast majority of Korban Menachot, all the offerings that were brought, the meal offerings, as well as the vast majority of bread that came along with the Korban, was always specifically the concept of matzah. Not that it looked like a matzah or our matzah. Because here's the thing. This chemical reaction that gets triggered when alkaline meets Amy B, once it comes in contact with intense heat, it gets killed on the spot. So that kills the chemical reaction. It can't rise again afterwards. Whether you do that through boiling hot water, whether you do that through frying, or whether you do that through dry baking, either way, the heat would kill the agent. Okay. So that's why it's called matzah. So people tend to think of challah and matzah in a singular form. You know what challah looks like, you know what matzah looks like, and you're wondering, how could you have challahs matzahs? Sounds like a contradiction in terms. The matzah as you know it, and the challah as you know it, cannot be one and the same. That is correct. But a loaf of unleavened bread come in various forms.
So in this particular instance, this is the one instance where you're allowed to have chametz?
This is the one instance where 10 of the breads are chametz, and that's why we don't bring a korban toida on Pesach. And that's why this Mizmor LeSoda, which is the psalm that expresses thanksgiving to Hashem, that we recite immediately after Baruch Sha'amar, we do not recite it during Pesach. And then Erev Pesach. We omit it. Why? Because there's no korban toida brought. Why don't we bring a korban toida on Erev Pesach in the morning? Because you have to finish all the breads by midday. And that would be unreasonable. So anytime we don't bring a korban toida, we don't actually recite that psalm.
So why replace the korban toida during Pesach? I mean, today it's a halak.
What replaced the korban toda during Pesach? There was no korban toda during Pesach.
So we can consider the halal as korban toda.
If you had to say thank you brought your korban the day after Pesach. There was not a daily obligation to bring a korban toda.
It wasn't a daily obligation.
No. It's a korban yachid. This is a private offering. So why does somebody bring a korban toda? Or why would somebody be obligated to bring a korban toda? Let's take a look in Rashi. Rashi, now we're on Parsha Tzav, the 7th chapter. We just read the 12th verse. So Rashi says like this. Im al korban toida yakrivenu. If it's al toida, if it's due to a thanksgiving, yakrivenu, that the person draws close. Says Rashi. Im, if the reason that impels him to bring this korban is al dvar hoido, because he or she wishes to express and acknowledge al nes shenasalei, a miracle that has happened to them. Kigoin, what kind of miracle does it have to be? One of those miracles and wonders that one reads about in the Bible? What kind of miracle or wonder is it? So Neis Shanasalei is Kigoin Yer Dehayom, like people who make a transoceanic journey. Once upon a time, whenever you got onto one of these boats that made a transoceanic journey, you were always taking a risk. You're always taking a risk. Because if a gale storm would hit, you're done. And there are many stories of gale storms hitting and people never coming home. Sailors took a risk. We didn't have the technology we have today. We couldn't predict when it would rain or when it wouldn't. You could leave shore, be a balmy, beautiful day, and 6 hours later, a storm could hit at sea. So there was always a risk. Very famous Jewish people were lost forever. The Rambam lost his brother in such a monsoon off in the Indian Ocean. The Rambam had a brother, his name was Ibn David, and he was lost in a monsoon. He was a merchant, and he would go to India. He would buy all kinds of materials, fine materials, and bring them back to the Middle East, to Israel, and sell them. And that's how he sustained the family. Now the truth is, once upon a time, the greatest commerce was done in this way. Why? Because business always, in a sense, relies on risk. Profit and risk are directly related. If there's no risk in the investment, you can't expect to get high yields. You want to get high yields, you got to take a risk. That's the nature of business. GICs don't offer you much, but you're secure. A lot of people are happy to be secure, and they don't want to get offered much. Other people say, I can't make a living on that. I got to do business. So there's a whole formula they use of risk assessment, and you lose here and you gain there. And in the end, you hope you come out on top. Many people have called Bay Street a casino, and I'm not so sure it isn't. But at any rate, the point being is once upon a time, the most lucrative business was business of bringing merchandise from distant places. Why? Because it had the greatest risk. First of all, you don't know if you were going to come back alive. Secondly, you had all this merchandise. You'd spend all this money, and you had to bring all the merchandise and had to come back. So when a person would make it across a transoceanic journey, he would make this bracha. Incidentally, because that's the halacha, so when we cross over a transatlantic flight, we still make this bracha. Even though aviation is relatively safe, and it's probably safer to fly in a plane despite all the terrible things that we hear about than get into your car and drive to work. Nonetheless, since we talk about the transoceanic, even though we don't have the dangers of once upon a time, we still remain with that thing. You know, the Moshe Feinstein held, anytime you take a flight, you have to make a bracha of a gomel. But most of the Paschim do not agree with that. Nobody, I don't know anybody does that today. But if you fly across the ocean, that's another story. Holchei Midbaris, people who make a trans-desert journey. There's a place in the United States called Death Valley. Yeah. You know why it's called Death Valley?
It's pretty desolate.
Yeah, it's pretty desolate. And a lot of people died on the way. If you ran out of water, you ran out of luck. There was nothing you couldn't do. You couldn't ride as quickly as you could, but if you ran out too early, that was the end. Chavushe beis asurim, people who are incarcerated. Now, incarceration in today's day and age may be somewhat safer than incarceration of antiquity, but it's still a dangerous business. And there are gangs, and you have to get protected, and your protection costs you sometimes awful prices to pay. It's a very, very scary place. So when a person, Rachmana Litzlan, is incarcerated and comes out of incarceration, then he has to bring this korban. And the fourth and final is Chayla Shenestape, a person who was threatened with a debilitating illness, not that he had a cold or a strep throat, a serious debilitating illness, and came out of that debilitating illness. Shehaim, that these four people, Tzrichim Lahedis, they are required, they're mandated to acknowledge Hashem's kindness. We'll talk in a minute about that. Shekasov Behen, that it says about them in Psalm 107, which incidentally is by custom recited every single Friday afternoon right before Mincha. And the reason is you made it through a week of snarling traffic, a week of aviation, a week of all kinds of things where the dangerous things could happen. And Baruch Hashem, you made it to another Shabbos. So we recite this Psalm. And in this Psalm it says, David HaMelech says in chapter 21 and 22 of the Psalm, he says, Yoidu la Hashem chastai. Yoidu, the word Yoidu means acknowledge, like the word Hoidoya. La Hashem, to God chastai is kindness. V'nifla Esav, and his wonders, livnei Adam, to humanity. And then what does it say afterwards? Yoidu la Hashem chastai, acknowledge Hashem's kindness, and then what should you do? And then it says, V'yizbichu zivchei seida, and they will bring slaughterings of thanksgiving. In other words, korbanot of thanksgiving. So we learn from this pasuk, by the way, two things. It says, "Yodu Hashem chas livnei Adam." The Yizbuch Ziv say that we see there's a responsibility for us to acknowledge Hashem's kindness. We have to say thank you. That's very important to point out. It's first and foremost. And after the notion that we have to say thank you, that we're morally impelled, if you will, or menschlichkeit impelled, however you want to call it, but we have an obligation, a Torah obligation, to say thank you. So after we have this obligation to say thank you, we do it by means of a korban. But v'seich rabim ahalalenu. Rashi doesn't bring this down here, but that's done in a public fashion. And that's why, in today's day and age, where we don't have the korban, we make sure to say the special blessing called Hagomel. And where do we recite the Gomel? The tradition has become that we recite it at a Torah. Why? Because the Torah is never read unless there's a public, unless there's a minyan. So since that's the part that always you're guaranteed to get a minyan, that's why it became customary that when somebody gets an aliyah at the Torah, that's when he makes a Gomel, or even if you don't get an aliyah, the Torah is taken out, that's when you make the bracha of Hagomel. Now Rambam says, the Rashi says like this, that al achas me'ele, if for one of these reasons, nodar shlomim halolo, this person would have brought a shlomim and peace offering. So it's not a regular shlomim, it's not a regular peace offering. It's a peace offering which is called shalmei toda hein. This is a different kind of peace offering. There's a peace offering which a person could bring only because he wants to be closer to Hashem. Did you know that? You don't need a reason to bring a korban. If you want to bring a korban, just like that, you're welcome to do so. Come to the Beis HaMikdash, I want to bring a korban. Why? I'm happy. I'm grateful. I want to bring a korban. I want to be closer to Hashem. No problem. What kind of korban do you bring? Can't bring a korban chatos. You have to sin for that. You don't want to bring a korban chatos. Korban chatos is when there's an imperfect situation. Asham, even worse, guilt. You don't want to do that. What kind of korban could you bring? A shlomim. Having said that, there's a subsection of the shlomim. And the subsection of the shlomim is when it's being done as an act of specific thanksgiving, because you're one of these four people. And that's when it's not just called a korban shlomim, but it's called a shalmei toda. It's called not an ordinary peace offering, but a peace offering that's brought for the reason of saying thank you. That's called shalmei toda. So the shalmei toda, and these shalmei toda have a special halacha. And the special halacha is v'te'uneis lechem. With these shlomim, these four people, their shlomim requires bread, which we said is actually matzah for the most part, but ha'omer binyan, the point is the specialties loaves. Ve'eino ne'acholin, they are only eaten le'yoyim ve'layla, the day of the korban and the night that follows. And rabbinically, that means you have to finish it by midnight. K'meishim v'furish kanas is explained. As we go on now to say, and that's why Pasuk, verse 12, Pasuk Yud Beis begins, im al toy de yakrivenu, because the first introduction is korban shlomim. And the korban shlom as a asha yakriv l'Hashem, that you're drawing close to God. Drawing close to God, that's first and foremost. That's what this is about, as the Kli Yakar said. You're not bringing it because any of any specific reason. However, im al toida, if what's impelling you to come close to Hashem is your need to say thank you, to acknowledge Hashem's kindness, if it's al toida, so then the hikriv al zevach al toida, then we have the pasuk says chalas matzeis bulul b'shem and kikim matzeis b'shukum b'shem and meruveches chalas. That's when we have the loaves, the wafers, the bagels, and so on and so forth. So Rashi says arba mini lechem, four kinds of bread: chalas, loaves, rekikin, wafers, uruvucha. For lack of better terminology, I'll call it a bagel. It means that which is scalded in hot water before it's baked or fried. V'shloisha mine matzah. These three kinds are not the challah you're used to. Challah is just a euphemism today. Challah means a specific kind of braided bread for Shabbos. That's what it's come to mean. But challah just means really, it means a piece of bread. It means dough, which is baked. So these three are mine matzah. These three kinds of challah are unleavened. And it says, al chalas lechem chametz. The next pasuk, verse 13, it says, and if you'll bring, what kind of loaves? Leavened loaves. V'chol min umin, each one of these four different kinds of loaves, the three unleavened and the one leavened, how many loaves do you bring? How many loaves? Eser chalas. 10 loaves. Kach mefodesh b'menachas. This is explained in the Gemara Masech Menachas on page 77. The shiuron, and how much is it? Chamesh se'in Yerushalmius, a measure of flour, a specific Jerusalem measure of flour, which is called a saw. This is not a small amount. Now, the Jerusalem had a larger system of measurement. Shem Shisha Midbarius, which make for six of the what they call the desert standard. And this is Esrim Isarin, 20 Isarin. The Isarin was a tenth of an ephah that we talked about earlier. Some of the karbonot, some of the offerings were a tenth of an ephah. And this is something which is Shesh Se'in is 20 of those Isarin. Some karbonot said one Isarin, this is 20 of those Isarin. And that's each one of the saw. So we're not talking about tiny little bagels. We're not talking about tiny little chals. We're talking about loaves. 40 loaves. Now the Kohen gets one of each. So the Kohen gets four, which means you still have 36 loaves. And the 36 loaves have to be consumed?
Short period of time, like by midnight.
Like by midnight, like the day of the Korban and the evening that follows. And you have to, besides consuming 36 loaves of bread, you also have to consume a whole animal. You know? Sounds like one of those eating contests. So how could that be? What did you say?
Dr. Bernstein
diet, yeah. After. How could it be? How could the only way is if I bring it. The only way is if you have to bring people together. And that's where the custom comes, that when people thank Hashem, they make a Seudat Todayah, they sponsor a Kiddush, or they make a Fabrengen, and they invite their friends over. And that way, we know that's been ever since when? Since the time of Moshe Rabbeinu, the original Fabrengens. I mean, for sure, Mordechai was a chassid. Who else could have made a yomtev where you're supposed to, so to speak, say l'chaim to the point that you go out of your limitations? Yeah, only a chassid come up with that. But the idea of a Fabrengen, meat and bread, that goes back to Moshe Rabbeinu. The time of the Mishkan. Why? You had a todah, 36 loaves and an animal. There's no way to do this by yourself. So you invite friends over. If Yidden are sitting together and thanking Hashem and eating kachem, eating that which comes from the Beis HaMikdash, they're definitely not talking about Monday Night Football. What are they talking about? They're talking about holy things? No, that's a fabrengen. Miruveches, what is that? Lechem cholo. This is scalded bread. Bereschen in boiling hot water called sarkei. Now, by the way, when you took dough and you scalded it in boiling hot water, what do you think happened to the dough? What happened to the live agent, the leavening agent?
It's dead.
It's finished. So actually, it was matzah. Very different matzah than we would imagine today, but nonetheless matzah. So this is the business, the opening volley of the business about the korban shlomim and specifically the korban todah. So we're going to study today one of my favorite teachings about the korban todah. An amazing teaching from the Rebbe from the year 1985 about the concept of the korban todah. The Rebbe says, we just learned together in Rashi, that there's four different kinds of people. Yeah. Okay. So the Rebbe brings down that there's a tur. Where the tur says, Nasan Simon La'arba Matzav Melu. He gives a sign for these four different kinds of situations. The transoceanic voyager, the person who goes across the desert, the incarcerated individual, and the person who's threatened by debilitating illness. Four different kinds. You get out of the situation. At that point, you make an act of thanksgiving to Hashem, in time of the Beis HaMikdash, an offering, and then a Fabrengen. These days and age, a Gomel at the Torah, and a Fabrengen. So the Torah says, we say every single day in our Amidah, in Hashmon Esrei, it says, V'chol HaChayim Yeducha Sela. All those who are alive, they thank you for eternity. So he says, Chayim, life. Everybody knows what Chayim is, right? If they don't know what Chayim is, they know what L'Chayim is. But the lamed in front just means to life. So Chayim is life. He said, yeah, what's life? Life is comprised of four situations. Ches stands for chayla, the person who's sick. Yud stands for yisurim. Yisurim is suffering, and that stands for incarceration. Yam stands for the great sea, the trans-oceanic journey. And mem stands for midbar, going across the desert. So the Rebbe says, rem is zed, derish bir. This allusion, where we find a hint of this idea, v'chol ha'chayim yiducha sela, requires some elucidation here. Harei ha'medubur hu ba'arba matzav m'shol sakonas chayim. The Tur just told us that life is made up of mortal danger. It's the exact opposite of life. These are the four things that threaten life. How could life be made up of four situations where your life is actually flashing before your eyes? These things are mevatas. These things are expressive of hepech hachayim, the opposite of life. So the Rebbe says, V'yesh levar zayis, we could explain the words of the Torah, al pi ha-halacha, by virtue of the halacha, and it's found in the Torah Shulchan Aruch in chapter 46. And of course, it's discussed at length in the Gemara, where you have a situation of a document, a legal document. It's called a shtar. And sometimes you have a shtar, she-yatsa alav irur. It's a shtar that the person, you bring it to court, and a person wants to use the document to, shall we say, to demand a loan or enforce some kind of business arrangement. And the person says it's false. It's a counterfeit document. So that's called a shtar she-yatsa alav irur. That's a document upon which the question has been raised. The challenge has been posed. It's not real. It's not good. It's counterfeit. It's bad. It can't be used in a court of law. So what happens then? Ubezdin docha esa'irur. Bezdin says there's this challenge that's been made. Well, we're going to overcome the challenge. How do you overcome the challenge? It's what's called in today's day and age notarization. If it's a notarized document, you can't come along and dismiss the document. You cannot simply say, ah, it's a piece of paper. No. It's a notarized piece of paper. So when they have a situation, v'kova shahashtar tokaf, when they say this shtar, this document is valid, it's effective, then shuvla nitn la'arur alav. So if somebody brought an aspersion, cast an aspersion on a legal document, and then the legal document was subsequently notarized, afterwards you cannot cast aspersion again. We did this already. The aspersion was cast, you threw shade, we brought sunlight, there's no questions now. So once you have what's called a notarization, a birur, once we have clarity, then the ability to weaken the document is taken away. So ask yourself the question, as a result of the shade thrown on the document, what happened to the document? It became a weaker document or a stronger document?
Stronger,
because before it was susceptible to an attack. You could delegitimize it. But once you've already answered the delegitimization, then there's nothing to talk about. That question's been answered already. V'hu adin binyaneinu. So too, the Rebbe says, we could export the halacha from the laws of documentation and import the halacha into the law of thanksgiving. When a person finds himself in a situation of danger, where you don't know, life is insecure. And after being fearful for one's life, you're safe in this situation. This situation does not diminish life. This situation enhances life. You appreciate life differently. Why? Because people take things for granted. We live in the age of entitlement. People expect everything. It's coming my way. Who says? People don't appreciate so much of what they have. They don't appreciate their eyesight. They don't appreciate their hearing. They don't appreciate their coordination. They don't appreciate their digestion. They don't appreciate a lot of things. And what happens, Rahman al-Santa, a person who was threatened with the ability to lose one of those things, and then he got it back? Oh, you don't take anything for granted anymore. Mayata ein elu chayim stam. This is not just life. Well, life happens. Ela chayim sha'over nesyenis. This is life that was tried and tested. This is life in which there was shade thrown and aspersion cast. This is the life in which you came out of sakonis and kshiyim, a life you came out of danger and you came out of difficulty. Amdu behen, you managed to get through them. V'hizgabru aleim, you managed to overpower those situations. You transcended them. So therefore, life is appreciated differently. As that famous saying, which is a cliche, but still true, if it doesn't kill you, it'll make you stronger. So, ein masim yeser, there could be no more suitable way to express life rather than the term chayim. Chayim is an acronym. As a remez la'arba matzav melo, to this kind of situation. Matzavim, situations, shamna ma'avim sakana betchila, situations that comprise great danger at first. The point here is not that life is made up of the situations that threaten life. The point here is that life is appreciated when you come out of those situations. After being in a situation and transcending that situation, they enhance, they elevate, they strengthen, they undergird, and they deepen our appreciation of life itself. May we all live appreciatively. May we not be threatened with anything. And may we merit Hashem to bring the Korban Toida in the third Beis HaMikdash. B'mheira will be amazing.